Welcome to the Lorehounds Podcast. We're your guides to the Grand Line. I'm John, former waiter at Baratier.
And I'm Alicia, retired trapeze artist from Buggy Circus. And this is our coverage of Netflix's live-action One Piece Season 1. So Season 1 first, before Season 2 comes.
That's right. We're here to prep you for Season 2 coming March 10th. But for now, we're going to start spoiler-free in our hot takes. Then after a break, we're going to get right into the full spoilers, recap the full Season 1 so that you don't have to rewatch all 8 episodes. I think it's 8.
But you can, because it's delightful.
It is delightful, and I can't wait to talk about it with you, Alicia. That's a spoiler for my hot takes. You want to tell people where to find us?
Yes. So if you would like to share your thoughts about One Piece, we'd love to hear them. You can send that to our new email address, onepiece@thelorehounds.com. There's a link in the show notes. And yeah, we'd love if you would subscribe and share a rating wherever you're listening. Share this episode with anyone else who's into One Piece. All of that helps us enormously.
Absolutely. So coverage plans. We're going to do a one shot for season one. We will do at least a one-shot for Season 2. I guess we can touch base on that after we've seen how in-depth Season 2 goes. For now, like I said, we're going to do mostly spoiler-free hot takes in the before the first break. But I do want to talk about the premise in case people are, you know, testing the waters, as one might say, for this series.
But
let's go in right away. What did you think? What are your watery? I'm just trying to do hot takes, but with like water.
Yeah, I don't know. Something about sinking or swimming. I did go in knowing some things about the premise because you have been needling me for a while. Like, watch One Piece.
to be clear, I am a One Piece stan. I've watched probably 3/4 of the anime, and you have not watched any of the anime, right?
No, it's definitely something I've been aware of. I think that most people who are into pop culture are aware of One Piece as a phenomenon. And how many episodes does the anime have?
It's over 1,100 now. I'm not sure the exact number. It is also, last year at least, it was the most watched show in the entire world. So it's bigger than people realize. Maybe not as much in the US, but like it is a huge worldwide show.
Yeah, right. Because this is Japanese, of course, anime. But then you said they're also, didn't you say they're kind of like in getting in the end game for the anime? Is the manga, so it's based on a manga. Is the manga finished?
No, the manga is not finished. They are both in their final saga. So the, you know, if you want more information on this, we did a few episodes, me and my friend Moses, we did a few episodes a couple years ago on the first few arcs of One Piece. We meant to continue, didn't work out with scheduling. Maybe we'll get back to it at some point. But essentially, there are multiple sagas, and a saga contains multiple arcs. And so this season of television was basically all one saga, while still being multiple arcs, right?
So it condensed the anime / manga a lot then.
It really condensed it quite a lot, but I think that they did a really respectful job in doing that. Yeah. We'll get into that, you know, sort of production details a little bit in the minute. I'm going to sprinkle them throughout rather than doing a dedicated section on it, but I want to get your general thoughts overall on it as a first time watcher.
I mean, so as someone, I'm glad that I came in, you know, so you've been talking to me about the anime, and you're not the only person who has been talking to me about the anime, like, oh, you would like it, you would like it, you would love the lore and the characters and all that. But of course, it's intimidating to have like these 1,100 episodes or whatever. So I am glad that I jumped in with just this first season for now of the live action show. It gives me a chance to judge it without knowing what the bigger picture is and just take it for face value on what was delivered to newbies like me. And I thought it did a really great job with that. Like, to me, it never felt rushed. I thought they did the pacing well, the way they spread out introducing the characters. So you had time to get to know them as they joined the cast rather than just being overwhelmed with all of them at once in the beginning. I thought it was 8 episodes. For me, I'm usually complaining that it's not enough. And I'm sure a lot of the anime fans must be. But for me, it really told a cohesive arc for for each of the characters. Like they had a really nice coming together moment at the end where they're all revisiting their goals as children. And that's satisfying. I really quite liked it. Like there's the side of my, like the TV sins side of my brain that was like, oh, some of this is some serious cartoon logic. Like that's not how cover up tattoos work, but
yeah,
but, you know, I just let go of that because obviously this is not a show about scientific accuracy or things.
No,
like
not
that.
At all. Not at all. You do have to treat this as basically a fantasy, not just, right. a science fiction show and not just a pirate show. And what I'm glad about is they didn't try to make it more realistic because I think that would have really ruined the magic of the show, the magic of this formula. And instead, what they did was they, and I'm kind of segueing into my hot takes. I'll go back to you for final thoughts.
Okay.
But, what I wanted to say is they really leaned into the found family aspect and this, you know, follow your dreams aspect, this idea of a bunch of people coming together for a shared goal, but also their individual goals. I think that they really nailed all of those relational dynamics. And that is the core of One Piece. It is. And this is why I recommend it to Wheel of Time fans a lot, is that it is very much about the people, very much about the characters, spending time with them, hanging out with them. And the same way the Wheel of Time will spend a lot of time that on things that are maybe not like directly plot relevant, but will pay off in terms of character development, this show is the same way, especially in the anime. But they do a pretty good job summarizing it in the show, in the live action show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing that I talked to you about privately before this episode was how much I appreciate the casting. Now, I've talked a lot about Luffy's casting because I just think they really nailed getting someone who can have that like cartoonish boyishness. And they did a lot of good things with the cinematography and like emphasizing his lanky limbs and stuff and just visually telling the story of this character and great stretching powers. Honestly, I would have liked to have seen some of those stretching powers in Fantastic Four. But I didn't really mention to you the rest of the cast, and I think they're all great. Now, I knew when this show was airing that people were thirsting after the entire cast on the internet. I get that now, but it's wholesome. But then I also said to you, it was a little bit more violent than I expected. So this is definitely not one for young kids.
No, definitely not. And that's true of the anime too. I mean, the thing is, like, a lot of it is probably suitable for young kids, and then it'll just be like fight, and it's like everyone's bloody and terrible, and then so you just can't chance it.
They cut someone in half in the first episode, but the way they did it was, it wasn't like if it were a rated R show like Walking Dead or something, then a bunch of guts and organs would have spilled out. But no, it's just sort of this like vague red gumminess on their two halves.
There's a cartoon aspect to it too. Yeah. I mean, something that I love about this adaptation is that, you know, like I said, they didn't shy away from the silliness of it. And that's true of like costume design too, right? There are people dressed in ways that no one would ever dress in any real capacity, but they want to have that recognizable style from the anime, and that's fine. Like, as long as the acting is convincing, I think you're fine to be a little cartoonish with the costume
and the set design. They do it intentionally. They do an interesting mix. Like, okay, so a bunch of the characters have hair colors that are not human tones, which great.
Right.
but then you notice some of them, it's really clearly a wig where like the entire thing is blue hair. And then other ones, they just have them like their dark roots growing in and they're like, that's fine. That's a look too.
Like with Zoro. Zoro is often called Mosshead in the anime. So, that's the insult that somebody lobs on him quite often.
But then there's also things like, for instance, Luffy's, he's got like those jean cutoff kind of three quarter length, whatever. Rather than just having like frayed bottoms, just jean denim naturally frays, they have like sewn on this perfectly frayed bottom where they're really just like, no, we're going for the cartoonish, perfectly imperfect look.
Yeah. And that's great. I think they did a great job with this. This ended, people largely say that this ended the curse of anime adaptation.
Right.
Because there was Dragon Ball Evolutions, I think it was called. It was like a horrendous, like the Dragon Ball movie that adapted the manga and the anime into live action was so bad that it made the original creator of Dragon Ball go back to writing the manga. Because he said, I have to create new content so that this movie is not the last word on my work.
That's fair.
It was that bad. That Death Note was terrible. Cowboy Bebop, I heard, was terrible. These adaptations, which, by the way, a couple of those were Netflix, right?
Right. Cowboy Bebop, like, I love John Cho. And so I tuned into the first episode of that and I didn't finish the first episode. And maybe that's on me. I know some people did like it. But for me, I was just like, yeah, it's got everything that I should want, but I'm out. But I will defend, and this is technically not anime. I did like the Netflix first season of Avatar The Last Airbender. You know, I don't think it's lives up to the original. It does also condense and things like that, but I quite enjoyed it and thought the casting was excellent there too.
I love the Avatar cartoon. I still have not gotten to season one of the live action show.
Okay.
But anyway, I mean, those are my general thoughts. Do you have any other thoughts on the season without giving any spoilers?
No, just it was a good time, and it was a fun binge. I'm glad that I actually waited until now, because now it's fresh in my head, and I ended very excited for a season two, so I'm glad that there's one coming next week.
So are you convinced to watch the anime so you don't have to watch it, so you don't have to wait anymore at all?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely not going to get to it this week, so. No, I know that. So I'll just watch season two for now. I don't know about watching the anime. We'll see. You said something about an anime reboot coming.
There is. So we were told last year that it was coming like late 2025, early 2026, but that seems to have just blown past. So nobody has heard exactly when it's coming, but it is getting rebooted while the old anime is finished. Like, they're both going to run at the same time, but the new one's going to start at episode one. And it's, you know, a lot of shows have done this in recent years. Dragon Ball Z Kai was one. Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood was another one. They go back, and well, I guess Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood is the closer example. But they go back and they restart the anime and they try to do a very close, no filler adaptation of the source material. Because there is a decent amount of filler. In One Piece, the anime, not a ton, especially compared to like Naruto, but there is a decent amount of filler. And, you know, people will joke about the pacing in One Piece. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen these videos on the short platforms where they'll say like going to the bathroom, but One Piece pacing. And then they just play ba, 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 da, ba, ba, and they do like a million angles of you just walking to the bathroom.
No, I just I just remember like seeing memes of people being like, One Piece fans will straight look at you in the face and say, just wait until episode 600 and it'll get good.
It's not wrong. That's not wrong.
I mean, I'm not going to say I'm never going to watch it, but I have so much on my to watch list that it's just that most of the stuff on my to watch list is not more than 1,000 episodes. So
it's tough to justify.
Yeah, but I'm totally in for the reboots, and I am in from here on out on the live action.
Very cool. I am too, you know, being the anime watcher. I think that this is a really respectful adaptation. You mentioned the casting, you know, Eiichiro Oda, the creator of the manga and anime. He first of all, was given complete, basically final creative say on everything, which is nice. Why it's so faithful. You know, and that makes me hopeful for the Brandon Sanderson adaptations coming up too. But he actually did an interview where he was talking with the Luffy actor. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I should have pulled up Wikipedia, but he was talking to him and he said, I'm just so glad I lived long enough to see somebody embody my character so perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, he does. I mean, I don't know the source material, of course, but you just have the sense this is the character driving the story because he is very hope punk.
he is. This is very hope punk, isn't it?
Iñaki Godoy. is his name.
Yeah, he's perfect. They, you know, the it's an international cast, as you can see. And that is intentional. That is that was in the agreement that Oda made with Netflix. He said the cast has to be international to match my intention in the manga, because they all were. He does these. I think this happens in a lot of manga, but he does these like Q&A at the end of a lot of his chapters, right? And he will answer questions. They were like, well, what nationalities did you base the One Piece pirates off of, the Straw Hat pirates off of? Mm-hmm. He's like, Luffy's supposed to be Brazilian. I'm not going to list the other ones right now because I don't want to spoil
who's in the crew. The actor's Mexican, but that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's not, it's not perfect, fine. But it's closer than.
Well, you'll see if anyone who's listened to the Oscars International episode where I had a Mexican guest will know that they identify very closely with Brazilians. So.
Okay. Fair enough. Another character is supposed to be Japanese, and that matches, you know, like, they did a good job making it an international from at least all regions of the world cast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to go into what I would call our spoiler light section. So if you want absolutely no spoilers, I would stop now. But really, all I'm going to tell you is the opening narration from the anime. I'm pulling it from the anime.
All right.
Because, and I started the anime podcast that we did a while ago a similar way, because I just think that it is so perfectly an encapsulation of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to be Gold Roger?
Sure. I'm ready.
Okay. Wealth, fame, power. There once was a man who obtained it all. The Pirate King Gold Roger. His last words at the execution stand sent people from all over the world out to sea.
My wealth and treasure, it can be yours if you want it. Search for it. I left everything in that one place.
Men now set sail for the Grand Line in search of romance. The world has entered a great pirate era. So anyway, that's the premise, is there was a great pirate era. When the king of the pirates was killed, he was like, hey, I put all my treasure in one place. And that is the One Piece. That's what all these pirates are searching for. And so this execution of this pirate kind of backfired on the world government. It, you know, it caused a huge great pirate era where everybody and their mother was joining a pirate crew to find the greatest treasure ever created.
Nice. Good for
him. We love it. All right. If you're not sold on the series now, then you should probably stick around anyway, because we're going to spoil it all right after this break. All right. And if you're curious where all this sound is coming from, it is from the original anime sounds.
I have not listened to your episodes about the anime because I haven't watched them yet and I didn't want to be spoiled. So those sounds are new to me and I find them lots of fun.
I appreciate that, because I did try to recreate the whimsy of the show.
I feel the whims.
That's great. We all need more whims in our life. So there's five arcs that this show covers, this season of the show covers. We are all in the East Blue saga. This is all the East Blue saga of One Piece. That's the first saga. It's a pretty varied one. It's a lot about, as you know, Alicia, it's a lot about just gathering the crew up. We're building up the first set of crew members. Maybe of them. But the first set.
I liked how they handled, I never felt disoriented in the show, even though there's a lot of locations, you know, like I didn't, they don't show a map. They show like, you know, not an actual usable map in the show. But I got that they were in the East Blue. There's something called an All Blue, where all the blues come together in the main line or whatever. Maybe. Has something to do with
Nobody's found it, but maybe.
Right. Right. Yeah, and that was kind of, you know, and then there are the names of the different towns where they spent the most time. And that was, like, I could remember that enough for the arc where they, you know, so they're like, oh, we have to go back to Cocoa Beach or Grove or whatever it's called. I'm like, oh, no. So I thought they handled that well for people like me who have no idea of what anything in this world is called.
Yeah, I'll say it's not even that representative of how the show usually is. Usually you spend, like, 100 episodes of the anime in one location, you know, on one island. Mm-hmm. In the first saga, because we're building the initial crew and we can't just like have an adventure together yet, they're jumping from place to place trying to gather everything, right? And that's, it makes sense. That's Luffy's mission as he starts off. He goes around and he's trying to find a navigator, and he's trying to find a swordsman, and he's trying to find a chef. He just needs all these different crew members. And once we get everybody settled a little bit, then we're going to get to the Grand Line, and that's kind of where the story really begins. I see this whole saga as kind of a prequel to the real adventure. And I know that that sounds really annoying because, again, it's like, after 600 episodes, you're really getting going. But no, after the East Blue arc, the East Blue saga, you're really getting going. And we're not quite done with the East Blue saga, by the way. We have one little arc to finish at the beginning of the next season, but it is basically like a prequel arc for the next saga. So I'm supportive of their decision not to include it in season one.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I like an origin story, and so I'm glad that they didn't just be like, and they're just on this ship, and here's all the characters. I'm glad that we took some time to, you know, video game style gather them up.
Yeah, I think they did a good job. Do you want to tell us what happened in the first arc, Romance Dawn?
Sure. We're introduced to Monkey D. Luffy, a young pirate who ate a devil fruit called the Gum Gum Fruit that gave him the power to stretch his body like rubber, but took away his ability to swim. After helping Kobe escape service as Alvida's cabin boy, the two head to Shell's Town, where they find the great pirate hunter, Roronoa Zoro, imprisoned. They usually just call him Zoro. Yeah. And I can remember that because swords. Anyway, but the different kinds of swords. Anyway.
Yeah, it's also, by the way, it trips people up because in the manga, he's Zolo, and in the show, he's Zoro.
Interesting. I guess in like Asian pronunciation, the R and the L are quite close to each other, but still. Okay, anyway. Luffy defeats Marine Captain Axe Hand Morgan, helps Kobe achieve his dream of becoming a Marine, and rescues Zoro. Zoro then joins Luffy's crew as its first member. So
we get a couple introductions here, right? We got Monkey D. Luffy, the man of the hour, and we get Roronoa Zoro. What's your first impression of Luffy here?
I mean, just like, this is... at first, you don't know, is he Hope Punk, or is he Hope Punk, or is this veering into toxic positivity, you know? I'm glad to say it is the latter, but you have this setup where he's just like this maybe too happy-go-lucky kind of guy, and then it actually makes things have more impact when he drops that later, and he's like, no, now I'm serious.
Yeah, I think you said, like, when he locks in.
Yeah.
It's really great. And that's true. A way that Moses told me, and I agree with this, is Luffy does lack a lot of, you know, maybe common sense and like book smarts, but he's really emotionally intelligent. He really has a high EQ here. And he gets to the heart of people in a way that a lot of people can't do, even very smart people.
Right.
And he sees intentions very clearly, and he has a really great moral compass and moral clarity.
Yeah.
And that's why he's a compelling leader to me, because he's not a Mary Sue Gary Stu, right?
No.
He has a lot of flaws, but you're rooting for him anyway, because he's just got this heart of gold.
Right. And you see where he learns things from. It's not like, you know, he just kind of lucked into this or something. He has, you know, it turns out, as we'll talk about more, he's been being trained in various ways his entire life by the people in it. I think it's funny, in a later arc, a character, maybe it was Nami, is just like so annoyed that he's always right with these ridiculous assumptions about people's behavior.
Yeah, I know, because Nami's like, you know, book smart, extremely intelligent, but she's
more cynical.
Exactly. She's very cynical. And who can blame her? We find out her backstory later. And who can blame her for her general attitude towards pirates, right? And what I find really, I don't want to get too deep into Nami yet, but we get a lot of cynics in this show being converted by Luffy. And the first one, of course, is Roronoa Zoro. What was your, you know, did you think, I mean, I'm sure that you knew that he's in the crew, right? Just from general osmosis of culture.
I mean, I suppose I'd seen pictures. Like, I've seen pictures of the anime versions of the crew. But to be honest, I knew very little about who was part of the crew, other than I knew there was Luffy and I knew there was going to be some clownish character who would show up just from seeing images. But I didn't, I think maybe I heard or saw Zoro being referred to as like the hot one or something like that, which fair. Yeah, but I mean, it's just, yeah, he's an archetype, but, you know, with the heart of gold. And so I feel like we haven't completely seen him yet. We know, we learn what his ambition is to be the greatest swordsman. And I'm waiting for that friend we saw in his flashback to come back. And I'm also waiting for something, him to do something better with the third sword than hold it in his teeth.
Yeah, it comes.
okay.
It's coming. There's reasons for it. I mean, it does feel a little silly sometimes, and a lot of the time he'll just be like, okay, two sword style doing this. They did a lot of really funny stuff with him. Like they did these nods toward the anime and almost mocked it a little bit, but in a playful way. Like I think Luffy says at one point, like, well, all the best fighters have names for their moves, and he's like, no, they don't. And which is hilarious to me because the anime Zoro is like, two sword style dragon, you know.
Well, it also, it reminded me of Wheel of Time, but also it reminded me of like every anime where they have to, yeah, you have to shout out your moves.
yeah. I love it. I love the way that they do these cute little nods. But I mean, Zoro is a lot more grumpy in the show, I'll say, than in the anime. He's still very serious in the anime, but he has more like slap. There's a lot more slapstick humor in general in the cartoon.
Yeah, well, no, I think it's good that they have, you know, someone who's more, he's still a likable character. I just feel like he's a closed off character, so we learn the basics about him, but we don't get as deep of a view into his psyche as, say, Luffy.
Yeah, I think they're going to go a little deeper into it in the first arc of the next season.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You'll learn a lot about him, and I think it'll be rewarding. We did get dramatic backstories in general this season, so I don't think there was a lack of that. I think it might be smart to save some of it for next.
No, season. I mean, I don't think it's a lack of them doing anything in the show. It's just the type of character he is.
So. Yeah, that's true. Did you think that Kobe was going to join the Straw Hats?
I guess at first I assumed any character this season that they put focus on was going to join the Straw Hats. And then there were several times during the season I was like, oh, Kobe's done with the Marines. But I like the, what's the name of Axe Hand Morgan's son?
Helmeppo.
Oh, that's Helmeppo. I like the arc between Kobe and Helmeppo this season. And you know, as soon as I saw, okay, Kobe really is going to join the Marines, it's like, that's going to be interesting. That adds more complicated dynamics. And it indeed did. I didn't even know everything about the Marines yet, which we'll obviously talk about. But I liked that when they have characters you're rooting for on both sides of a situation.
Yeah, and what's interesting about him being the first person Luffy meets is that immediately Kobe's dream is contrary to what Luffy believes in, right?
Right.
But he goes, okay, let's go help you do that.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any second thoughts about it.
Yeah. And he doesn't say, are we doing full spoilers?
Yeah, for this season, yeah. Full spoilers for this season.
I mean, I can't do more than that anyway. But he doesn't say, like, oh, my grandfather runs the Marines.
I can help you out that.
But anyway.
Which I want to point out, like, the show, the anime does not reveal that early, that Garp is Luffy's grandpa. I don't know. I think it's fine to do it early. It's just interesting that they chose to make Garp a much bigger part of this arc.
Can I ask a question about, so it's Monkey D. Garp is his grandfather, and Monkey D. Luffy. So the Monkey D is the family name part?
The Monkey is the family name. D is like a whole can of worms that we can't open today.
Oh, okay. All right.
it's like a whole other non-family thing.
Okay. All right. All right. So, we're just doing, I mean, it makes sense. It's a Japanese anime. We're doing it. But of course, just like seeing it, not having any idea about this world, when I saw the main characters called Monkey D. Luffy, I assumed Luffy was the family name.
I know. I think a lot of people do. I did at first. I will also tell you, and I think they make this clear when they do subtitles and whatnot, like Gold Roger is not Gold Roger. He's Gold D. Roger.
So the D is more widespread. Got it.
Yes. There will okay. You will meet more Ds.
All right. Interesting.
Can't talk more about that yet, but we'll get there. Maybe we'll get there a little bit in season two. Not sure, because they're moving a lot of stuff up.
Hmm.
So we get a lot of other minor characters introduced. We get Alvida as this, you know, kind of cartoonish villain. We get Axe Hand Morgan on the other side, on the Marine side, also kind of a cartoonish villain. And I guess you like Helmeppo and his new haircut?
I mean, new haircut, no. But, I mean, Helmeppo starts out as a cartoonish, rich entitled boy villain. And right. then goes on an arc over the season. So I did not like Helmeppo when he was introduced, but by the end, he had earned my liking.
Yeah, he does have a good arc. They emphasized it more in the live action than I thought they would have based on, how much they're in the anime. But I thought it was good. I thought that all the casting for all these was really good. Kobe was a trans actor, and I think that's really good representation to have somebody, playing in their preferred pronouns and everything,
Well, Kobe, just seemed to me, I don't know the character, obviously, again, from the anime, but just the character was very clear to me, what kind of this is a very nice person who has someone who believes in the system, but still has morals. Yeah,
and Kobe, I think, questions a little more in the live action than he does in at least openly than he does in the anime. And I appreciate that they played up that aspect of him, because it's good to have this stuff voiced, right? Because it's very easy to be like, all right, there's a world government. Clearly, the Marines are not good faith actors in a lot of these situations. These are all bad, right? But now moving Garp up and having that. That character development for Kobe, I think, really helps to complicate the dynamics.
I mean, I feel like Kobe is the quintessential Boy Scout, and the uniform emphasizes that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Pretty funny on the uniforms. And it really goes with Helmeppo's hair.
Yeah. Yeah, Helmeppo sucks at first.
Now, you also get some of the first cartoonish fight moments with Axe Hand Morgan. Was this jarring to you, or what'd you think of all that?
No, I was expecting cartoonish fights. That doesn't even stand out to me per se. I guess I was surprised that after this, after Axe Hand Morgan is sort of deposed within the Marines, that we didn't see him again all season.
Yeah, that's kind of par for the course. He's not that big in the show either, in the anime either. I keep saying the show, but I have to differentiate. So, by the way, I should mention, if you're a longtime listener and you see that these descriptions of arcs are familiar, that is because I did recycle them with slight tweaks to match. They are my old anime descriptions, but. It's basically the same thing. So I just
tweaked it. It goes to show you. Yeah.
What's going on? Yep. Work smarter, not harder, folks.
So wait, so you did how many episodes with Moses? How many episodes did you cover?
We covered the first 100, I think.
Okay. And that is equivalent to this first season, more or less?
I can get you an actual count. Give me one second. Okay, I have gotten the actual count of what's going on here. It's actually fewer than I thought. This is only up through episode 44 of the anime that we got in season one. They did bring some stuff ahead. They did do some stuff from later, some reveals and things like that. But we didn't get that far. And I will tell you that I think next season they're trying to get through episode 91, so not that much more.
Okay. So they can do so many seasons.
People are kind of questioning that. What? Are we going to? I mean, the thing is, later on, the seasons, the sagas take up more episodes, and you could probably condense it further than you have been condensing here. And you need to have a solid foundation of the characters, right? Of the main characters of the Straw Hats. So I'm glad that they took their time with season one and season two.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. It was like when they were planning the full Wheel of Time adaptation, it was just understood that, there were later arcs that all of us knew, like, oh, yeah, they can totally condense that or just take it out.
Yeah. You know? The tough thing is, there's not a lot that they can fully take out.
Mm-hmm.
But there is plenty of, like, again, we're walking towards the fight now. There's like a good 5-minute section where they're walking towards Arlong's village.
Okay.
With dramatic music playing.
No conversation even?
No. Oh. Just music. And they're and you just have the dramatic fight music, the dramatic marching music, and Luffy just having a tough look on his face, and they're all marching.
All right, cool.
That's One Piece, baby. You know? That's what it is. Why don't we go to Orangetown next? Okay, so part of me reusing my old description is I forgot to mention that Nami did show up in the first arc, and they did move that up because she doesn't really show up until Orangetown in the anime.
Okay,
so I'll read this one because I'm gonna edit. I'm gonna edit as I go here. So Luffy and his ragtag group of friends ends up in Orangetown, ruled by Buggy the Clown Pirate. Luffy is betrayed by Nami and caged by Buggy. Nami and Zoro work together to free Luffy before Luffy fights and defeats Buggy and his chop-chop devil fruit powers. Nami travels with the crew, maybe not joining them, but they are going to take one of the ships and head out of there. We also get flashbacks of Luffy eating the gum gum fruit out of Shanks' loot and being saved by Shanks, with Shanks losing an arm. Now, we should have talked about Nami in the last episode, but I guess you get a little bit more of her in this one. First of all, first impressions on Nami?
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely, we talked about her being the cynic of the group. And I noticed that she was the only one that they weren't, like, she was one of the first introduced, but I definitely started to notice at some point we are not seeing her backstory, but then they do, of course, give that tease where, oh, we even talked about their snail communication technology.
Oh, yeah. Those are super fun.
I mean, this is one of those things that clearly this is an anime concept. They're like, just make it live action. And I'm glad they did.
Yeah, the transponder snails are super hilarious. A lot of the technology is snails. There's like broadcaster snails at one point. That's not even a spoiler. That's just more ridiculousness, you know?
But she has like a little snail earpiece that we see her at some point that she's like communicating with someone. You're like, oh, something shady's going on with her. So I spent most of the season suspicious of Nami until we finally got her backstory.
It's tough. They don't make her as suspicious in the anime. I'm kind of glad that they made her a little more suspicious in the live action because it made it less jarring when she just runs off with the ship later.
Right. Yeah. I did assume that it was for a good reason or whatever, but I was just like, there's definitely another shoe that's going to drop about this character at some point.
Yeah. And I'm also glad that we get it out of the way pretty early. Like, we're in season one. We're putting Nami fully in the crew later. But yeah, you know, she was sus, and we learn what happens later. What do you think about Buggy?
Yeah, I mean, Buggy is, like, so well designed. I just kept staring at his nose and how they made it, like it's part of his face in the sense that it has, like, real nose pores on it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just the way it's textured and everything. Buggy is an interesting one, and I'm glad that Buggy by the end of the season becomes a complex, not even quite frenemy, but I could see him getting to the frenemy, you know, point with this crew.
My lips were sealed.
Okay.
And I'm not even saying either way on that. It's complicated.
Yeah, and that's the sense that I got already. It's complicated. And it is kind of fun that, like, yeah, Buggy can has these chop-chop powers, but it also means that, you know, you can just separate his head from his body, and there's not much he can do until he can bring himself back together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's funny. Different Devil Fruit powers will have different weaknesses, right? But this seems to be a pretty weak one, right?
Yeah. Stuff. I don't know. I mean, because it also showed like he can break out of anything.
Yeah, Buggy. You know, we'll learn some more about Devil Fruit powers later. They do have part of it here, which is you can't swim anymore, right? And the sea will make you really weak. The sea's angry at you now.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I'm curious about like why that specific disadvantage. I don't know if it's just because or if they ever explain that other beyond the sea is angry.
I'm about 800 episodes in and I don't know yet. I'll just say that. I just genuinely don't know at this point.
Okay. All right.
It just is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And so there's no like super swimmy gum gum or devil fruit?
No.
Okay.
No super swimmy devil fruit. If you touch water and you're a devil fruit user, you cannot do anything.
That would be a fun twist.
Wouldn't it? We also get Shanks. We get the backstory of Shanks and Luffy. How'd you feel about that whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I was waiting for Shanks to show up, and I'm really glad about how that all came together with certain characters at the end of the season. I think it's lovely that both Luffy and what's his face, the chef, was it Raji?
Sanji.
That they have people in their lives who were willing to lose a limb for them.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah. You know, Luffy might not have too much support around as a kid, but he he had that.
Yeah. Although arguably Sanji's case, that was worse. Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But yeah, I liked Shanks and I was like hoping to see him back, but I figured it would be a later storyline. So I'm glad they seem to be setting something up for season two.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how they're going to weave him in. You know, obviously they weaved in Garp a lot more, so they could bring in Shanks earlier and they might. I love Shanks. I think he's a great character and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with him in the live action. But, you know, he's just like such a fatherly figure to Luffy, right? And that's so nice to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I do wish we had a little bit more of Luffy's mother, who, by the way, like they flashed to her at one point, you know, being proud about her son later. And I'm like, looks like the same age as him. I'm sorry. She's 30.
Okay. Let's talk about that next season.
Not his mother?
I don't believe that was his mother.
Oh, okay. Well, they could have clarified that for me then.
yeah, they could have been a little clearer.
Because I'm not sure what Luffy's whole situation is other than he looked up to Shanks.
If they follow the anime, you're not getting this for another like few seasons.
Oh boy, okay.
I'm just telling you. I wouldn't hold your breath for Luffy's backstory. For Luffy's full backstory.
We'll see. Maybe they'll I mean, since he, as you said, introduced his grandfather earlier, maybe they will explain the connecting pieces more.
Yeah, that is his real grandfather. Yeah. I will just confirm that. We don't have to speculate on that forever. But the other pieces are going to get trickier.
What's the generation in between? Okay.
Yeah, the generation in between is very tricky.
Okay.
All right, so what else we have here? You know, you get the creepy circus. Everybody was thirsting over Buggy.
Yeah, I mean, the actor, I know the actor from other things, and he is an attractive man, but the nose, I'm sorry, doesn't do it for me. Nope.
But think of all the things he can do with it.
Like what? Boop you? Boop you, yeah.
His album is called Sensual Booping. So you also get Garp. This is the first arc that I believe has Garp. Did you trust him? How'd you feel about him?
I mean, I had an inherent distrust of all of the Marines except for Kobe right off the bat. So no, I did not trust him. And I suppose the fact that he kind of overthrows or whatever Axe Hands and says, like, mm-hmm. no, that's not how we do it. I suppose that's supposed to say he is more moral than Axe Hands, at least. So there's that. But no, I spent most of the season distrusting Garp. And I'm not sure that I trust him by the end. I don't know. Like, especially after we find out that Luffy is his grandfather, and then he's like, no, all kid gloves off. Go after them hard. He wants to play like a grown up. We're going to like, what? What? You are terrible. What is this family?
This family is insane, and it will only get more insane. But, you know, I think that Garp and Luffy are kind of character studies in, like, believe in helping people meet their dreams, but also seeing morality through different lenses, like seeing like, I can do good from within the system versus I need to do good outside of the system. Those are opposing views, and they both have merit in a lot of ways. But Garp is certainly firmly in the system. He is a tried and true Marine. There's a reason he's a vice admiral. He's that's a very high rank in this military.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he seems like an interesting character, and I like all of the dynamics that this show sets up, where it's not just like the Marines are the bad guys, you know, bad police. It really does give more complex dynamics on that side of things as well. So that's a good thing.
Don't worry. We're going to have so much world building in the show. Yay! There's going to be layers and layers of nobles.
Give me the lore. Give me the lore.
There's going to be a lot of stuff going on. This is a Wheel of Time type show. This is, you know, slow burn, lore dropping, world building, character development. Let's go.
All right. I'm in.
Let's take a break, Alicia, and we'll come back and we will talk about Syrup Village.
Okay.
All right, let's go on to Syrup Village. Luffy, Zoro, and Nami arrive in Syrup Village, a quiet village with a loudmouth liar who can't stop shouting about pirates. The liar Usopp has become close with Kaya, the local rich orphan with a kindly butler named Clahador. After discovering that Clahador is actually the pirate Captain Kuro and is plotting to kill Kaya for her money, the Straw Hats and Usopp team up to save Kaya and the town. After saving Kaya, they are gifted their new ship, the Going Merry. Usopp decides to join the crew.
Right, and this is where Nami was so annoyed that Luffy was correct about that him just finding someone to give them the perfect ship.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of optimism that I just love about Luffy, right? Like, he's like, oh, no, somebody will give us a ship.
Like, why would someone just give us a ship? But he was right.
Well, they did have to do quite a lot of work for it and almost die.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, as soon as I saw Kaya, I knew exactly the entire situation. I'm like, she's clearly being poisoned. Look at her lips. Why does nobody see this? It's clearly that guy. That guy's no good. And then, of course, they do the reveal like, oh, everything that's a virulent blue color is poisonous. Like, surprise, surprise. So this was maybe I liked getting to know Usopp and Kaya, and I'm wondering about, part of me almost hoped Kaya would go with them, although I knew she wouldn't. I this was one that I saw like the entire arc playing out before it really even started. So I was like, all right, come on, go ahead now. Let's get to the end of this arc.
Kaya was giving me a Sally Sparrow vibe from Doctor Who.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I guess I can see that. Very sweet and, innocuous.
Anyway, I think that this was the arc that suffered the most from the contraction, from the compression. You know, they do a better job of, like, making you do a, is he bad, is he not, with Clahador for a few episodes in the original show. I don't think they did that quite as well here. Like you said, you can kind of immediately be like, okay, that's the villain.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they didn't like waste too much time before they revealed in the kitchen the whole poison thing. But then it's like, Luffy, I have questions about, okay, I said I'm not going to like stick science to this, but how does Luffy, he's able to put things into his mouth and then like spit them back up, like the map, for example, because of like the rubber insides. Mm-hmm. How does he absorb food?
I'm overthinking this. Trust me, Luffy's thing is absorbing food. So he does it very effectively. Yeah.
He loves food.
I can't answer that question. I don't think anybody could. I don't think Eiichiro Oda could.
Okay. I do. The actor does really sell me on how much Luffy loves food.
Yeah. He does a really good job of that. Like, yeah. Hey, when's the next meal? And the fact that he just downs the entire pot and survives is absolutely absurd.
Yeah. And then he throws most of it up. And then I was like, well, is that because of the rubber stomach? I don't know.
Maybe that's why he remains pretty skinny, is he's eating a lot, but he can't digest most of it.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, there's I'm not aware of any explanation. I mean, in the anime, of course, you have the ridiculous thing of him being like, you know, huge and round for like 5 minutes after he eats.
Can we talk about the age of these characters? Because for some reason going in, I thought that they were going to be like teenagers, but then they started talking about drinking alcohol and stuff. And then I looked up the ages of the actors and they are, I think Luffy is the youngest. He's, I think, yeah, it kills me that people are born after the year 2000. he's born in 2006. And I think most of the rest, I think, Luffy and Kobe are the youngest, and most of the rest of the crew is around 30 years old. They were born in 96.
Yeah.
And then Shanks, the old man at age 40.
There's going to be, you know, there's other crew members that we haven't met yet that might be a little older, but most of them in the anime are supposed to be late teens, early 20s.
But they are, I mean, because the fact that with all the, there's a lot of drinking alcohol, so I guess they are all meant to be adults, right?
It could be, or it could be that they're in a different world with pirates and a lot more swashbuckling.
Right. I guess the American audience requires them to be.
I think they're never going to give an age in the live action, you know?
All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Fair.
Especially, if this is going to go on years and years, you're going to have, like, Emily Rudd right now is 33. I think she's one of the older ones in the cast. And that's Nami. And she's going to be 40 by the time we're on, like, season 5, you know? And so how long can we sell these characters as being in their early 20s, or should we just ignore it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess just ignore it. But I was just wondering if Luffy is supposed to be the same age as the others, or if he is meant to be younger.
If you look up in the One Piece wiki, which I wouldn't recommend because it's going to spoil things for you, but Luffy, I think, is supposed to be 17 at the beginning of the anime.
Okay.
And then the others are supposed to be like a couple years older than him.
Okay. All right.
Most of them.
There we go.
But I don't know what they're doing with the live action. I think they're just going to be purposefully ambiguous so that nobody asks questions.
Gotcha.
Like Alicia. Stop asking so many questions.
Sorry, can't turn off the journalism mind.
So Clawhador, obviously very bad guy. He's moving super fast. We don't really get an explanation for that. He's not a devil fruit user. He just does that.
Oh, really? I just assumed he's not a devil fruit user.
Nope. Oh. I think I can explain it with something that is revealed later. I can't do that now.
And he has the claws, too.
The claws are just in his gloves.
So they just like, he just, the gloves are somehow magical that they hide the claws and then
they're like retractable in the gloves for some reason. That's at least how it is in the anime. I guess they don't really do the mechanics in the live action.
I mean, yeah, because they showed like someone examining the gloves and they just looked like normal gloves. There was no hard parts that claws could retract into. So it's just magic.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, don't poke too many holes for us.
All right, and the speed is just magic. It's not devil fruitery.
It's something. Okay. It's likely something that is explained later, like a technique that's explained later. Okay. But I can't really go into it now without some spoilers. It's a mechanic thing, but you know, I think this was kind of early drafts of what Oda was eventually going to work into the power system.
Okay.
So we've got this whole situation. They get their ship. Usopp, you know, we didn't really talk about him. You know, he had a whole crew in the original anime. He had three, like, small children. He had three, like, eight-year-olds who would just follow him around as his crew for Captain Usopp. And I kind of missed that. I wish they had added these little runts. But they cut it out of the live action. Did you like Usopp?
I liked Usopp. That does explain a lot. Like, it makes him less delusional if he did have eight-year-olds following him around, at least. But I can see why, from a practicality standpoint, they didn't want to have to include children in this. It would have affected
They really condensed this arc into, like, just being at the mansion. Right. Like, they were all over the island in the anime.
But it's the practicalities of filming. Like, there's so many restrictions when you film with children, too.
Yeah.
Which is good. We, you know, child labor laws are good. But yeah, I understand that might have been impractical for a number of reasons.
We've been talking about that because in the pit, there's a baby Jane Doe. There's a baby nobody knows who it belongs to. And that's not even a big spoiler. It's like the first episode of season 2 it happens. So, but anyway, David and I have been talking about how, like, the baby's barely in it because they have to keep, like, working around the baby.
Well, I would assume that they have, like, five babies, because at least when you're a baby, it's easy. The babies look a lot alike.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Usopp, I feel like he's the, of the crew, is the one that I know the least. Like I said, I was saying before that Zoro is, like, mysterious, but I feel like I know the least about Usopp, other than he loves Kaya in ways that are unclear to me by the end of this. Like, I'm not sure whether I'm supposed to take him and Kaya as romantic. I guess so. Or what?
Yeah, I, you know, one of the rules that Oda has had for his characters is that none of the Straw Hats are allowed to get into long-term relationships, because he thinks that would make the story boring.
Oh, okay.
So I'll just say that, like, it's just not going to happen long-term. I don't know. Maybe in the end, they'll go back to Kaya.
Yeah, but, okay.
You know, during the arcs, they're not going to get into any long-term relationships.
I saw people were shipping Nami and Zoro, so I guess that's not happening.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I think, you know, I don't understand this. Like, I think not enough stories realize that there's interesting story to be mined in how people stay together. Like, it doesn't have to be that 90s TV kind of thing, like, where, oh, they got together and they're happy, so now we have to break them up. Like, no, show how people freaking work through problems. This is why our world is so broken. We don't model good behavior.
It's all about the chase in fiction, right?
Just a drama.
Yeah. I have recently read interesting media where they do explore that a little bit more the way that you'd prefer.
Yeah.
This is not going to be it.
All right. I'll drop that.
But I mean, they do also a better job in the anime. This is, again, I think this is the arc that suffered the most from the compression. They do a better job of showing, like, Kaya is sick and Usopp is the only one who's coming to her window and telling her stories. And even if they're made up, she just has fun listening, right? She just has a friend. I don't know.
It's interesting that, like, because you can tell that, I think they convey that well, you know, where she just enjoys hearing the stories. It's funny, like, how they introduce Kaya is, you think that Usopp might just be delusional because of the way the staff is treating him and trying to bundle him out of there. And then Kaya shows up and it's clear, like, no, they really are friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Staff is just the bad guys. But you do see, like, that tension where she enjoys Usopp's stories. You know, this is a good diversion for her and she cares about Usopp as a friend, but she's like, I know these stories are all bullshit. So then later, when they're trying to tell her that her own life is in danger, you realize she cares about Usopp, but doesn't trust him the way you would hope for in someone who's your best friend.
Yeah. It's tough too, right? Because he is really lying every day. I hadn't watched this episode in a while. Did they go into why he shouts for the pirates every day?
Yeah, because of his mom. It's a little unclear. Yeah, like, I was wondering if there's more into the story about his mom. Like, because I was wondering if his mom was also poisoned and died.
His mom died, but
she was sick.
Basically, like, she said, oh, your father will come back for you one day. And And he would keep going like, oh, dad's going to come back. He's coming back today, you know?
Right. And then we find out his father is part of or was part of Shank's crew, but I don't think we've seen his father yet that I know of.
Or have we? I don't believe we've seen
him. No, Luffy apparently knew him, so I guess we did, but I don't remember who it is.
Yeah, I think his name is Yasop. That is Usopp's father. You know, I guess that's the family naming convention, is you get a sop at the end of your name. But I don't think we've seen much of him yet. We'll see for now. It's interesting, right? Because Oda will have these flawed characters, but there's trauma that caused those flaws, right? There's reasons that Nami doesn't trust. There's reasons that Usopp lies.
I see. Yasop has like the orange fro.
Oh, okay.
So I remember seeing him, but I don't think, we haven't had much. He just, was there. Also, Shanks also has a naturally orange hair. So there,
So he's not standing out as much.
No, but I guess, it was just like friendly, unnaturally orange-headed men who were smiling at Luffy.
He's got like the third weirdest hair there, so he just kind of blends in.
Yeah, his is more natural than Shanks.
Yeah. So, you getting hungry, Alicia? Because we got to go to the best restaurant floating on the sea.
I mean,
tell us all about it.
That was great seeing them pull up. Baratier, am I saying that correctly?
Yep, Baratier.
Okay. The Marines shoot a cannonball at Luffy, who deflects it right back. They end up at the floating restaurant, Baratier. There, the Straw Hats meet Sanji, the sous chef of the restaurant, with a mean roundhouse kick. Zoro, do we see that? Okay.
He kicks everybody, doesn't he?
I suppose. Zoro loses a duel to Dracul Mihawk and promises Luffy to never lose again. Sanji, determined to find the All Blue, joins the crew as its chef. And this part for me, just other than like, I loved the concept of the restaurant overall. It reminds me of this floating Chinese restaurant we have here in Amsterdam, but the one we have here is not shaped like a fish.
You have a real Baratier?
It's not shaped like a fish, though. Uh-huh. It's shaped like a giant pagoda on the water. I love the setting. And then as we first meet Zeff, he seems like a jackass. And then we find out that he actually ate his own leg to save Sanji when he was a kid.
Yeah, it's pretty metal. I gotta say, this guy's super metal.
Yeah, and he's got the dramatic braided mustache.
Again, I love that they kept these things from the anime. They didn't make it more normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fun. Sanji, of course, meant to be portrayed as a French person, and they did it.
I did wonder, though, and maybe they'll fill this in the future, how, so they did the whole flashback with Zeff and Sanji and the whole eating of the leg reveal, and then it's like, and now we have this restaurant. I'm like, well, wait, how did you finally get rescued after that month of, and that was another one where Sanji was, the kid, was just like on the rocks in a month. I'm like, I think at this point you should stop looking out for ships and maybe try walking somewhere. I don't know.
They did, I guess, in the anime, I think, make a little clearer that they got found by a ship at some point.
Okay. I assumed, but yeah.
And then Zeff is just like, well, I guess I can't kick anymore, because that was his signature move. He was a kicker.
Oh.
I can't kick anymore. So I better just start a restaurant.
All right. And now, I mean, I had the feeling that Sanji was a better chef than Zeff, but now Zeff has left him to his own devices.
I don't think that's supposed to be a better chef in the in the anime, at least. And I didn't get that, I don't think, when I watched the live action, but I could see how, I mean, Sanji's just supposed to be like his prodigy, right? His, mm-hmm. his protege is, he is the best chef there. And he's going to be sad to lose him, but he wants Sanji to live his dreams. And again, that's one of the big themes of the show, is let people go live their dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. And that also comes up where somebody gets mad at Luffy for not discouraging Zoro from, dueling with Mihawk. Yeah.
Mihawk is one of the most notorious, maybe the most notorious swordsman in the world. And Zoro's like, I got this. Hold my beer.
I do like how Mihawk to me was like Puss in Boots personified.
Yeah, he's
with like the golden eyes and yeah, he's
very classic. Yeah,
and the giant sword. They did not tone down the giant sword. And then he pulls out in the duel just to insult him. He pulls out this like half dagger. It's like a nail file.
I don't need my sword. Thanks anyway.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm excited to see more of Mihawk. He immediately piqued my interest.
He just shows up and nopes out after ruining Zoro's life.
Yeah. And also that he was, he went back to the Marines and they're like, but I told you to kill him. He's like, I mean, I didn't want to. And at the end of the day, you tell me to do nothing. I do what I want. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's another aspect of the world building that they're hinting at right now. Perhaps there are pirates who work with the world government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you don't have the structure for it yet, but it seems like there's that kind of structure around, right?
Well, I mean, they do openly talk about there being, what is it, like,
the warlords? I forget how
many. Yeah, but they're like seven or whatever that they've worked with.
Oh, okay. I forgot that they mentioned it. Yeah, there's seven warlords who work with the world government. Basically, their bounties are, you know, held in abeyance, and they are just, as long as they show up when the world government asks them to show up, they are allowed to just operate.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they do mention that. They do say that a couple times. So I wondered, I thought that at the end, Gramps was going to offer that to Luffy.
Oh, Luffy's not powerful enough for that yet.
No, I know, but nepotism, babe.
Generally, the warlords are appointed because they have such huge bounties that people know. You know, one of the things that I should make clear is bounty level is, at least in the manga and anime, that is generally like a measure of power level in the world. All the pirates look at each other's bounties and are like, oh, you have $100 million bounty? You have $100 million berry bounty? You must be more powerful than the $50 million berry bounty person.
Okay, and that explains why Luffy's so excited to have such a high bounty and everyone's proud of him, even
his grandfather. That is a thing. That is a thing. You're missing out on, like, and they kind of do this at the end, I remember. But, you know, at the end of every major arc, whenever Luffy, like, gets his bounty raised and or there's a news story about what he did, it shows, like, everybody you ever met reading the news and smiling.
Yeah. I appreciate a montage that just checks in on where people are at the end of the season.
My favorite criminal is still out there.
Aw.
So, Sanji, can you give me your first impressions on him?
Yeah, Sanji reminded me of, like, and maybe it's the blonde hair. I looked up the actor, does not have blonde hair like that, but he immediately reminded me of, like, prep school boys I went to college with and stuff, who went to, like, you know, like Eton or whatever, fancy British schools. But then it turns out he is a lot more down to earth than you expect. But I do notice he is a relentless flirt in a way that, It's a way that toes the line, but ends up being good natured. Like he hits on, for instance, Nami's sister, and she's like, "Nah, dude," and he's like, "Okay, had to try." And it's like, I don't know if that's ick or awe.
Okay, so in the live action, I hope they keep it awe.
Uh huh.
I will say in the anime, there's a lot of really problematic stuff with Sanji.
Gotcha.
He does not take that no for an answer.
All right, a little bit Pepe Le Pew.
No, I hope they don't do this in the live action, and I'm going to spoil it now because I don't want them to do it.
Okay.
There is often a thing where every time Sanji sees a beautiful woman, he gets like a violent nosebleed. Like it's just flying out of his nose.
Oh, okay.
And I just don't want that. And then they put like hearts as his eyes and everything. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, I do find this as a thing in anime in general. I've been binging Demon Slayer recently. And a lot of the things about the way women are dealt with, or there's this character who's supposed to embody love, but that just means that she is obnoxiously fangirling absolutely everyone. I'm like, I don't love that. I don't love that.
Manga and anime, especially the stuff that's been going, like this show, is based on a manga that's from 1997 to start.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of misogyny in it.
Yeah.
And you just gotta, I mean, I'm glad that they're updating it a bit for the live action. I hope they continue to do that. And I wonder if they're going to update any of it for the One Piece, you know, the
new one. Probably. I would assume so. Yeah.
Yeah. We shall see.
I mean, but at this point, yeah, Sanji seems likable enough that backstory did a lot of heavy lifting. And the actor seems charming enough, you know, with a smile that's not creepy, but yeah.
Yeah, I like the actor. I think he's selling it. I was not sure about the accent at first, but I liked it in the end.
I didn't notice his accent. You said he's French?
He's supposed to be French.
And is it a fake accent?
I didn't even look that up. Maybe we should look that up.
Let's see. I have it open here. Taz Schuyler is the actor's name, and his background is Spanish-British.
Okay, so it is a fake accent.
Uh-huh.
I think it's fine. I just meant, like, I'm so used to watching the anime where they all have American accents, basically.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, a dub thing. That's what happens. You hire the American actors to do the dub, they have American accents.
Right. Yeah, I didn't notice it, but I guess so it didn't stand out to me as an obnoxiously fake accent, I guess.
Okay. So let's move on to our last arc. You want to read it? This sure. One I wrote today, so you won't have to worry about me messing it up as much.
Arlong Park. After Nami flees Baratie as a member of the Arlong Pirates, the Straw Hats follow her to Coco Village, Nami's hometown. There, they learn the tragic backstory of the island, which has been ruled over by the brutal fishman supremacist Arlong. Nami and her sister Nojiko were orphaned when their adoptive mother, Bellemere, was killed by Arlong. Afterward, Nami pledges herself to the Arlong Pirates in exchange for the opportunity to buy her village's freedom for 100 million berries. As Nami nears her goal, Arlong has the 100 million berries stolen. Nami stabs her fisherman pirate tattoo and asks Luffy for help. Luffy locks in and defeats Arlong in a fight, destroying Nami's prison in the process. Nami is freed and joins the Straw Hat Pirates for good. The crew then gets a visit from Grandpa Garp. And I had to laugh about the stabbing, because she stabs herself in the arm. And then next time we see her, she magically has a completely different tattoo.
I know.
There, which granted, they made it red as if it had just been done. But I was like, did she have laser removal in the middle? Like, that's not how. I actually looked it up. Like, is there some magic about tattoos in the show? And it's just the One Piece forum was just a bunch of angry people like, how dare you question about in an anime about cover-up tattoos? Like, sorry, that was the one thing that took me out.
It's a little ridiculous, but it's not even the most ridiculous
thing in the show. It's
so.
Symbolic. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get
Letter Habit.
I do.
Letter Habit. Again, I think we get the biggest Luffy lock in here. This is, for me, even in the original anime, this is the arc that made me go, oh, this isn't just a good show. This is a great show. This is a show that has something to say about power and where it lies and found family and what it means for you to be there for your friend. No questions asked.
Right.
And Luffy's basically like, I don't remember his exact words in the live action. I remember I've watched the anime part multiple times where he's like, I don't care what happened. I don't care about her backstory. She's my friend. I'm going to help her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't care if it was her fault or not. Something that they kind of made worse for Nami in the show is in the anime, the villagers knew the whole time that she was faking it and she was working for them. The only reason that they pretended in the anime was they didn't want her to feel like she had to continue. They were mean to her, and this is kind of crappy, honestly, but they acted like they didn't know that she was saving up for them because they wanted her to feel like she could stop doing it at any point. They didn't want her to feel the pressure.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that.
It's a little gaslighty.
Yeah. But it is sort of like you would think she would tell her sister, hey, I'm going to do this thing. But maybe she thought her sister would stop her.
Yeah. Her sister doesn't like hate her in the anime. It's just, they really changed that part up a lot. Like the motivations of the villagers and they did more development of the, that is just the main change that they made from the anime is they reduced the amount of side characters, they reduced the depth of the side characters.
Yeah, I mean, I did wonder also, I was like, what if first, I knew, like, they're not going to have more than one token female in the crew. But I thought, well, what if in this version they have her sister join on the boat? Nope, not happening.
there's not, stick around. There will be more than just a token. I'll say that.
Okay, all right.
Stick around with us. It's pretty crappy of Arlong to, steal her 100 million berries. I did want to make clear that fishmen are not, these are not people who ate devil fruit. This is a different species that mm-hmm. just exists in this world. They're not even a hybrid of fish and men. They're just fishmen. They evolved separately.
I thought that this was one of the better parts of the writing in the sort of analogy for racism. And things like that, you know, mm-hmm. You just want us to be your laborers, which you don't think of us as people equal to you, and how that might drive someone like if he weren't so awful and violent, you would feel for what's his name?
Arlong,
right. The shark guy.
Yeah, it's tricky, right? Because there are systems like the fishmen are treated worse in this world, no doubt. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mostly by the world government and the world nobles. And here's the thing, though. These people have never seen a fishman before. They're just like regular people trying to live their lives. And Arlong comes there and is like, you will pay for what other people do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's
And that's
he's
tough, a bad guy. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, where do you draw the line between structural racism and speciesism, I guess? Between that and individual accountability.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but I think that does reflect the real world quite well in a more nuanced way than I would have expected from an anime.
Yeah. He's a scary villain. He is, I think, the first villain where you're like, Luffy might lose this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty fun. It's fun to have stakes.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think he was a good villain. Just seeing like the way he can just cut people up with his nose is both comical and like I was more afraid of him physically than say what's his face, the detaching clown Buggy.
Yeah, Buggy. Buggy seemed more silly, whereas Arlong was just like straight terror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you like the pinwheel hat?
I don't really remember the pinwheel hat much.
On Genzo?
I don't remember who Genzo
is. He's reduced to a very tiny character anyway, so maybe you just won't remember him.
All right.
But, you know, you get Arlong, you get Kuro Obi, that's one of the guys working for him. You get Nojiko, Nami's sister, and then we learn the backstory of Bellamere. How sad is Nami's backstory?
Yeah. Oh, especially when you see there's chains on the floor where Arlong's talking several times, and then you find out later that Nami spent years in those chains, and he let her go for her 12th birthday.
Yeah, it's really dark.
Pinwheel hat! I do remember that because I was noticing it when it got knocked off. I was like, the guy in the town who has the face scars. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He, in the anime, they make him more functionally like Nami's almost like adoptive father, even though he's not. Like he just always was like a father figure in town for her.
Right.
And I'm honestly sad that they reduced his role in the live action.
Do they ever go back to the places where we've seen this season? Will we go back there again?
Because
they're leaving the East Blue, right?
They are leaving the East Blue and they're going to the Grand Line, and it is very hard to turn around in the Grand Line. I'll just say that.
Oh, okay. That's a shame.
At least in the short term. It can be very hard for them to turn around.
Gotcha.
All right. Also, Nami, I think, is ready to leave this place behind. Like she was chained here, and I'm kind of excited for her to.
She just made up with her sister.
I know. Again, that it kind of changes things when you know that like she actually did hate her in the live action, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. and stuff. And of course, we get Garp finally, you know, playing all his cards, saying, come on, hit me.
Yeah, that final confrontation, like, I was just, I don't know, Garp was going a little too hard after Luffy. And just the fact that Garp was sending Marines after them, knowing that they often kill pirates without being like, and at first it was like, oh, you have to bring them back alive. Like, okay. But then it was like, no, do whatever you need to do. And I don't know, that just, it's very hard for me to be sympathetic to Garp when he seemed to be declaring open season on his grandson in a way that might have gotten him killed.
Garp makes a lot of decisions that a lot of people disagree with, but he is an interesting character. He's definitely a morally gray character. And this was entirely an anime construction. I'm sorry, a live action construction. They did not have this confrontation, at least this early on, especially this early on with Garp. Luffy is well along his journey before he really has a big conversation with his grandfather. It's interesting. I think it's interesting that they bring it this far forward. It's kind of getting it out of the way, I think.
Yeah, I'm glad, because I might have felt like if it just turned up several seasons in, I'd be like, they just made that up after the fact. Like, otherwise, it doesn't make sense to me why Luffy wouldn't say, oh, that's my granddad.
It's funny you say that, because there are a number of characters that, like, there was a member of Arlong's crew in the anime that didn't show up here, but is a pretty major character later. And they kind of cut away. You know, Oda will do this thing in the manga and anime where he'll introduce a character for like 5 minutes, and then they don't show up for like 400 episodes, and then they're a major character.
Okay. Which, yeah, you can't depend in most cases on people remembering that.
Well, don't worry. They'll have like 16 flashback episodes for you.
Right, fair.
Don't worry, they're not counting on you to remember anything. So, yeah, we get Garp, we get this whole, well, do you actually want to be a pirate? Yeah, all right, fine, go be a pirate. I think it was fine. And I did enjoy his, Luffy's little debrief with Kobe at the end, like, be a good pirate, you know, be a good marine.
No, Kobe is an interesting character. I really like Kobe as a character who's like, I can't agree with your lifestyle, but I still consider you my friend. And thus this gives Kobe this insight into, like, pirates aren't necessarily bad. They are humans who have different moral compasses like any other type of groups of humans.
Right. There's good and bad pirates. There's good and bad Marines. I think that's what the show tries to leave you with.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I did like that Garp was like very, you know, wanted his grandson to obviously be a Marine and not a pirate, but then was very proud that at least his grandson got a good bounty.
Yeah, he's such a weird dude, honestly, Garp. All of these monkey people, I think in the anime there's one point where somebody goes like, what the fuck is with this family? They don't say fuck because you can in the anime, but they're like, what is with this family? Why are they like this?
I can't wait to find out.
And I like that Garp also is as obsessed with meat as Luffy.
Okay. I did notice
the meat.
That was how Zeff tried to like bribe Garp at one point. Like, well, oh right, because at the end there is something where the restaurant Bratier gets attacked, and so they have to rebuild it or something. And so he says to Garp, like, well, I have all this steak that's just going to go bad if you don't eat it. And that's how he bribes him.
Yeah. He's a bribeable man. We've learned that. I think I have pretty much all, I weaved in all of the differences that I wanted to bring up. I'm excited for season two. Like I said, we're going to have sort of a setup arc to wrap up the East Blue, and then we're going to go into the Grand Line. And that's not a spoiler. That's the subtitle for the season. One Piece right into the Grand Line.
I mean, that's like the last lines in this season, right?
Yeah.
I watched the trailers. I won't say any spoilers from the trailers. I mean, not that I really know what I'm looking at anyway, other than it seems like there are a lot of new interesting characters being introduced, like a lot. So I'm like, oh boy, here we go.
Perhaps one with a funny hat?
One with some funny hair that I recall. Well, a few, I guess. That's not really helpful, is it? Oh, one with a funny hat and who is more adorable than I expected from a character on the show, if that makes any sense.
It is a very accurate portrayal based on the anime.
Okay.
Everybody was debating, like, how are they going to introduce this character? And I'm excited that they're really going for it.
They're just like full on, let's just keep the character the same, it seems.
I mean, I don't know how you could do it differently.
I don't know. You know? Yeah.
there's also things about that character's powers that are going to make clear why they couldn't just put a person in a suit.
All right. I'm excited. And one of my favorite actors, David S. Malchian, turns up with some weird hair and pale skin, I think.
Das Malchian?
Malchian.
What's he going to play?
I don't know.
Oh, that's names. From Murderbot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know the character names. So wait, let's see. Do they have season two in here? Introduced in season two.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's so good. That's such a good cast. Okay. All right.
Mr. I'm excited. Mr. Three. Oh, and that's his hair is like a number? It's I don't know.
Three.
Anyway.
Yeah. His hair is a three. Yes. Yes. Absolutely it is.
Okay.
How much time does that take in the morning? You know?
I mean, how does one cut it? I guess you just have to have it longer on top, or
do you have a
pre-prepared wig? I think that would be the way to do it. You just have a wig that's ready to put on each morning.
I guess so. Or maybe you have like a wire in your hair and you put the hair around it.
Gotta be. Or there's some magical hair gel in. Is there a name for like this world?
No.
Okay.
Not as far as I know.
Just and One the Piece world. World. Yeah.
The world government is called the government. So I guess it's just the world. Well. So we did it. We recapped season one. Any final thoughts or excitement for season two coming on March 10th?
I mean, yeah. Like I said, I'm glad that I watched it so close to this because now I'm totally excited for season two. Those trailers I saw also were lots of like, I don't know what I'm looking at, but it looks like a lot of fun.
They're doing a theater showing, by the way, on Friday night, I think.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
I don't think they
at least in the U.S. So I hope people have fun with that. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it, but I'm going to try.
Okay. Yeah. So it comes out on the 10th and then we have to figure out when we talk about it.
Yeah.
Of course.
I have a feeling this is going to be so dense. We might have to split this up into two.
Okay. All right.
They're doing at least four arcs, maybe five.
All right. Well, you tell me before I watch ahead too far.
Okay. Fair enough. It's not, I don't think there's too many spoilers. There's going to be a lot of setup this season for the full grand line.
Okay. All right. Can't wait.
All right. See you then. For now, let's just do a quick outro. I know we have a ton going on the Lorehounds Network. David and I are weekly covering The Pit, which is a lot of fun. We're now doing full coverage. David's so obsessed with it, and I'm getting pretty obsessed with it. So he was like, let's do full coverage, and I agreed against my better interest. And we just finished up Night of the Seven Kingdoms. That was a lot of fun, covering with David, Steve, and Anthony. And covering it with you all season.
Two shows in my top 10 already this year, probably.
Yeah.
Between good that stuff. And Wonder Man, which we also covered recently.
And you've got your award season covered. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, in the thick of it, the Oscars take place on May 15th. So there's been a number of episodes released and there's going to be in these last
March,
2 weeks. Yeah, I said May, March 15th.
You're really ahead of the game this year.
In these last two, I wish they gave me that much time. In these last 2 weeks, there's going to be a speed run of a lot of the biggest categories. So watch out for that. I'm trying to get them all out to make sure that people have at least a few days after the last one to catch up on whatever interests them before the ceremony itself. And we will be having a live chat for that on the Discord for anyone who wants to join.
Very cool. We're recording Earthsea finally this week. I'm really excited.
Yay. It's but I want you guys to finish it. I want you guys to finish the rest of Earthsea 2 after this. Maybe it'll take another couple of years.
I don't know. I don't know if we're doing any Earthsea episodes after this. We'll see. I mean, this is the last novel, and we did one of the short stories already.
But the short stories are some of my favorite parts.
Well, then you should get on the mic with Marilyn.
Yeah, maybe I should, to be honest.
Yeah. I think that would be a lot of fun. I think Marilyn would appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
Jump on 500 other things.
I know. And I'm starting a huge project this week, too, with the Radioactive Rambling guys. Radioactive Ramblings is about to cover, they just finished Fallout. They're about to cover Invincible and then The Boys, final season. So if you're watching The Boys or Invincible, make sure you check that out. You're getting the most out of your Amazon Prime subscription with them.
Yeah, that's true.
Jeff Bezos should sponsor them.
Yeah.
And what else we got? Nevermind the Music, doing their weekly coverage of music and psychology. I'm cooking up a bonus episode to work on with them. And you want to talk about Properly Howard's Newlywed season a little bit?
Yeah, they just started their new Newlywed season. You can listen to their draft episode where they explain better than I can how they chose these movies. But it is an eclectic and interesting lineup for this season of movie reviews. So looking forward to it.
Very good. All right. Well, I think that's everything active right now. But you can find all of our affiliates via the link tree in the show notes. And we got to thank some people, Alicia. You want to do, you know what? I'm taking the shorter list this one.
All right.
I'll do the Discord server boosters. You do the lore masters. Discord server boosters: Aaron K, Tilda the Thriller, Duve71, Athena A, Lestu, Nancy M, Ghost of Partition, Radioactive Richard, and Adrian.
And thank you to our highest tier of subscribers, our lore masters, Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, SC, Peter OH, Nancy M, Duve71, Brian8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Andrew B, Kwang Yu, Nathan T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dali V, Mothership61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Liz Stu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Kali S, Ilmariel, Paul K, Rocky Zim, Jessica A, Red Zippy, the TCS, Dopamini, Catch It, LNR, Mrs. Tennant, AC Wilson, Eli W, Cassie K, Chumbaruni, Katia, Josh Lou, Paint and PDX, Corey G, Quinch, and always last, Adrian.
All right, everybody. We will see you next week, or maybe not, but soon for a recap of season 2. See you then.
We'll see you on Discord to talk about the episodes next week, right?
That's for sure. All right, we'll see you there. Bye.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and comments to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Get ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts on Patreon or Supercast, and connect with us on Blue Sky and join us on our Discord server. Links for everything are in the link tree in the show notes of this episode. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.